I loved it so much. And I think the two go so hand in hand. I wouldn't be where I am today with Electric Cat if it wasn't for Naui, because running a non-profit with zero experience is very similar to running a business with no experience running a business. So I think I learned a lot through Naui. And I mean, I vividly remember the day where I Googled, what does a chair do? What is a panel? I mean, I started from absolute ground zero. So it's definitely happened really quickly, which sometimes I do have to sort of take a breather and go, wow, okay, I have done a lot in a short space of time, but I genuinely think I wouldn't be where I am with my business if it wasn't for A, the experience I'm now, but B, the connections and the inspiring women around me.
Great events create great brands, but pulling off an event that engages, excites, and connects audiences? Well, that takes a village, and we're that village. My name is Alyssa.
I'm Paulina.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Felicia.
And you're listening to Great Events, the podcast for all event enthusiasts, creators, and innovators in the world of events and marketing.
Hi, everyone. What's been going on in this wide, wide world of events? My name's Felicia, and I am your host for this week's episode. So this month is all about celebrating women. I know we had International Women's Day. To be honest, we should have International Women's Year as far as I'm concerned. So what we've decided to do, we won't go all that way, but we're celebrating this month and we have some great women on our podcast this month. If you missed the last episode, be sure to go and check it out. But today I am joined by Kat Kevern. Now, why don't you just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thank you so much for having me, Felicia. Super excited to be part of your podcast. As you said, my name is Kat Kevern and I am the chair of NAWI, the Network of Women in Events. I also run Electric Cat Productions, which is my business. So a little bit more about NAWI. We are a nonprofit and everything we do is to empower women within the events industry. I'm sure we'll touch more on it later, so I won't go too deep into it. I was freelance for just under 8 years before setting up my own business and now run Electric Cat Productions, which is a marketing and events agency.
Love it. Thank you very much. So you did a far better job of that than I ever could. So I'm glad you got to introduce yourself. But we were just talking about, you know, working for large corporations versus not. And you're like, well, I kind of skipped that. So how has your career got, like, what brought you to this point today?
So I think probably like everyone you speak to, I fell into the industry. More specifically, I fell into the live music events side of things. And I was actually at university studying law. I grew up in France, so I moved to Paris when I was 18. And my dad thought it would be a great idea, if I didn't know what to do, to become a lawyer, because then at least I would have lots of money. And I hated it. After a couple of weeks, months, I sort of knew that it wasn't for me. I still had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do, but I loved the nightlife that there was in Paris compared to where I grew up in the countryside. So I started going out quite a lot and I realized that I could get in for free if I started handing out flyers in front of nightclubs. So kind of started from there, really.
I love that. I kind of did that too. I remember I joined what was called a street team at the time. And now was it, I think it was Lil Jon was on tour and I was part of the street team. I was like, yeah, if I hand these things out, I can go and watch concerts for free.
Amazing. Well, that's way more fun than probably the nights that I was involved with, but I really loved it. It all started from there. Because I was in France, nobody else in the team spoke English. So I got really lucky in that I got involved with, they just used to pull me backstage and be like, can you just translate for this artist? And then they got me to like go meet people at the airport, help with contracts, translations, things like that.
Love it. Now that is our first lesson learned, I think, about transferable skills. You know, like sometimes I talk to university students or people that are very, very new into the industry. And they're like, oh, I don't really have a full CV. I don't really have much to give. And I'm like, hold on. There's so much about you that probably you can give. And look at that, because you speak two languages. Excellent. You'll be the translation person.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
I took it.
I love that. So that was you in your very beginnings and sort of getting into the industry. So what happened after that? When you say you fell into the industry, what was your kind of like most serious, right, this is my job now and I'm in the industry? What was that beginning?
Again, I think my dad was like, you need to go back to uni, because I dropped out and he was obviously not impressed that having a dropout daughter, but I knew it wasn't for me. So I'm really pleased that I did, because I think otherwise I would have wasted 3-4 years of my life and then not ever used that degree. So my family were quite set on me going to uni and getting a career. So when I think after about a year out, I decided to move back to the UK. and studied events management and marketing. So that's when I really, I think actually I did it all the right way, because I really had my head screwed on when I did go to uni. So I studied at the University of Hertfordshire, and from day one, I knew exactly what I wanted. I knew that I loved events. I was kind of piecing together that you could make a career out of events. And I was like, actually, I did really love that, but I never thought I could even make a career out of it. So I started studying, lived at home to save money, and I was working alongside that as well. So I was working at Boots and Wetherspoons all at the same time, and also doing a bit of events on the side. So I've, through my university, got involved with the staffing company, and did some work for them over the summer, and then got involved with a couple of club nights in the UK, and then it all just sort of escalated from there, really.
Love it. And for those of you listening across the world, Boots, let's imagine you're in America, is like a CVS. And Wetherspoons, there's just nothing like it.
I did learn a lot in a short space of time. And as much as I do look back on it now, I definitely picked up a lot of skills I took into my events career.
Brilliant. Let's talk about that career. So, you know, Electric Cat Productions, I saw you the other day at Confex wearing like the brightest t-shirts along with your bright phone. And I was like, Electric Cat, that's about right. So first of all, tell us, like, what made you want to start your own business? And then tell us a bit about Electric Cat.
So I have been freelancing since, I always say, since I started uni, really, because that's when I really started getting into events. So it's, depending on how you look at it, with COVID, it's been 8-10 years roughly that I've been in the events industry. And as you mentioned earlier, I have never been full time. I've never worked for an in-house with an agency or a company for more than a couple of months on a project basis. So it really just came very organically, because I was freelancing. So before COVID, predominantly, well, 100% events. And then during COVID is when I really started to have to look at other opportunities. So that when I realized that events weren't coming back anytime soon, I really dove into the marketing side of things and was very grateful that I'd studied events and marketing. So I taught myself graphic design during COVID and absolutely loved it. Just got really, really into it. And then through that, web design, because I was always building my portfolio. And then I realized that obviously it's a little bit of a bigger project, so I could charge more. And with Squarespace and platforms like that, I never really learned how to code, but I learned how to use Squarespace really, really well. And then through that, I learned a little bit of Shopify, a little bit of Wix. And then again, just naturally progressed towards marketing strategy, taking all of the learnings that I had from my uni degree and applying them and looking at things a bit more holistically than someone saying, I need a new logo. So I'd go, okay, how does that sit? What else might you need? How can I assist you? How can I help you reach your target audience? And then COVID sort of came to an end, events started coming back, but by this point I already had lots of really great clients that I was working with on the marketing side. So I found myself in a bit of a transition phase where a good 6 months I was really juggling being on site at an event and going home and then doing all my marketing projects. So I was really spinning a lot of plates, and that's when I realized that it was a bit much, really, and that I wasn't able to deliver all of them to the quality that I would hope. So it was great to have all that work, but at the same time, I was wanted to be able to deliver it all properly. So that's when I decided to start the business. And that is round about the time when I met Eloise, who was the first team member to come on board. And then the rest is history, really.
Oh, brilliant. That just sounds so cool. And I think, you know, you've given us a little bit there of, like, you know, your uni journey and discovering what it is you wanted to do. You sound like a real sort of self-teacher type. You're kind of like, this is what I want, so I need to learn it. This is what I want, so I need to go and learn it. And I just think that should be really, really inspiring and help people to realize that you can set up your own business if you put the time in and the effort to kind of saying, I need to learn that. I want to know how to do that, right? So I don't think anyone's handed it to you. It sounds like you've done a lot for yourself.
I think my parents have always pushed me out of my comfort zone from a child, and that's something that I'll always be very grateful for. I think moving to a foreign country at the age of 7, there was no such thing really as a comfort zone for me. I was always, it was all different, it was all new, and being freelance, you know, I think jumping from one company to the next was so valuable for me, because what one company did was totally different to what the next one did, and how the team was structured, how organizationally, operationally, how things ran was totally different. So every event, I felt like I was learning so much, and I've always just loved learning. And you sort of mentioned about, yeah, starting your own business. I think very rightfully so, there is no half measure. It's an all-in kind of thing. I don't have children, but I can imagine it's like having children.
Yeah, they're very all in, I can tell you. I wish there were some days where I can kind of like, not today, you know, I'm not a mum today. And it does feel like, you know, in order to get that to the place where we want it to be, we would have to go more all in than we are now. So, you know, lots of respect to you that that is your everyday, that's your day job, is what you do. And I think, you know, building up, we were going to talk about NAWI, you know, you said you're the, is it president?
No.
Chairperson?
I mean, it's just a title, isn't it? But yeah, so I was very lucky to get involved with NAWI when I was at uni. And I think just from sheer passion, energy and relentlessness emailing the founders, they just one day were like, Kat, you just should run to NAWI. And they handed me the bank account and the logins. But it took a few years, but I loved it so much. And I think the two go so hand in hand. I wouldn't be where I am today with Electric Cat if it wasn't for NAWI, because running a nonprofit with zero experience is very similar to running a business with no experience running a business. So that I think I learned a lot through NAWI. And I mean, I vividly remember the day where I Googled, what does a chair do? What is a panel? I mean, I started from absolute ground zero. So it definitely will happen really quickly, which sometimes I do have to sort of take a breather and go, wow, okay, I have done a lot in a short space of time, but I genuinely think I wouldn't be where I am with my business if it wasn't for A, the experience I'm now, but B, the connections and the inspiring women around me.
Oh, brilliant. Well, so president, like I said, I mean, come on. Yeah, I know. I just feel like when someone hands you the keys to something, you'd be like, you know what? I fancy being the president. It reminds me of a lot of our US companies that we deal with, right? So, you know, you get all the different types of job titles. And I know that's one of the things we talk about a lot in events with women and our job titles. But, you know, in the States, you can often call yourself the president and the vice president. And I love that. Oh, man. See, maybe it's part of our difference between women and men as well. Who the men will be like, I'm the president. And you're like, no, no.
We don't even care. I remember having the same conversation with Harriet when she joined. And, well, at the very beginning when we reformed the committee. And I vividly remember her response, mate, I don't care about a title. Mm. And I said one day, I said, I think you're not just the treasurer, you should be vice chair. And she was like, okay, that's how that happened.
I love that so much. So delve in a little bit more for me with now. You mentioned what it's done for you, but what does it do generally for women in the industry?
Yeah, so to give a bit of context, now it was set up as a Facebook group by Zach Fox and Sarah Cole, who now absolute powerhouses within Sarah on Sarah Business. Zach is COO at Kilimanjaro Events, so all the huge concerts that take place across the UK. And they really set it up, yeah, 11 years ago now. And it started as a group that women could share job opportunities with other women before it sort of hit the mainstream job market, really. So to promote women, they were just sick and tired of seeing the exact same replica of middle-aged white men on boards at events, in companies, structurally, and all across the board, really. So originally when it was set up, there were three pillars, which are the three pillars that we still have to this day, which are networking, job opportunities, and increasing representation across the board. So everything we do serves those three pillars. And we have a variety of projects, events, programs, and initiatives that all come within those three pillars.
How do women typically respond to it? How do you kind of grow your membership? Do you reach out and say, hey, you should be part of NAWI? Or do you find people find you naturally? What happens?
So maybe contrary to some of the other organisations that are similar to NAWI, if you look at like Network of Women in Exhibitions or Women in Live Music. So we're not a membership-based organisation. We don't charge anything to our members. We never have, we never will. Everything we do aims to be inclusive, and barrier to entry costs can be one of those. So we want to eliminate that and never want to even have that conversation. So we consider anyone who joins the Facebook group a member. So when we count, when we say we have over 5,000 members, that's in our Facebook group. We don't have membership. So we're not, it's not a goal where we're actively trying to recruit new members. We are always actively trying to recruit new sponsors though, so if anyone sees or hears of anyone with a big bag of money, send them our way. But yeah, we're not trying to change the model. So we consider that anyone who identifies as female or is happy to be identified as part of a group of women is already part of our community.
That is so nice, and I love that, like reducing barrier to entry. And just lastly here, you know, you touched on sponsorship. What would the sponsorship do? What does sponsorship pay for if someone said, actually, I want to support that?
So quite frankly, it pays for all the non-sexy stuff that we cannot get via partnerships and contra and things like that. So when you look at our AGM, so there are now a team of just under 20 of us volunteering our time. So the cost of that alone, just on train tickets and lunch, comes to close to £1,000. When we do EPS, we, this year, Convex Event Production Show, so we curated all the content of one of the stages. We had a stand, we had networking drinks. So for that, we needed about 6 people. Again, just in hotels, trains and food was, again, 700 to 800 quid. So our website, Slack membership, there's lots of operational costs that I'd never even really thought of. So we do have a couple of £1,000 a year that go purely towards operational costs, but with those sponsorship opportunities. So for instance, sponsors can get involved by partnering up with us on a specific event anywhere in the UK or in London. They can get involved by supporting us with our newsletter, visibility opportunities on our website and things like that. So because we've put so much work behind the scenes over the last few years, really getting Nowy where it is today, I know now that there is such great value for sponsors. So when we have those conversations, it doesn't feel like we're asking for nothing in exchange. I know we have a lot of value to give to those businesses that are willing to come aboard and support our cause. I think International Women's Day is a great example of when it was lovely. Loads of people made great posts about us and mentioned us in their posts and reached out to us to ask us if we could give, you know, feedback on articles, if we would take part in podcasts, if we'd take part in, I spoke at 2 different events. What, I've got this podcast, I've got one next at the end of the week. So it's great. There are lots of people that are reaching out and that have interest. But if people do really want to support women, what are they doing throughout the rest of the year? How are they actually engaging? And how can they support beyond? So it's that double-edged sword, because when people reach out, we all give our time for free. So none of us have ever taken a penny in payment for our time with Nowy. But with that, every time someone reaches out, sends an email, drops inquiries and asks us to help them, we are pushing ourselves out of pocket even more by giving even more time. So it's a double-edged sword.
Now I hear you. It's women supporting women to progress as women, when actually what we need is a little bit more of the allyship, so that it's not just sort of, you know, like you said, other women giving up their time, their money, their efforts, and actually there's much more of a, how can other people support this community? So I love to hear that. It's so funny. I was sat in a room just last week on International Women's Day, and there was a bunch of women, like all women, and 2 of us had been asked to bring, you know, a couple of men. So a lovely lady called Hannah brought Martin Fullard, I brought Richard Bridge from Top Banana, and we interviewed them and we kind of had a great conversation on stage. But they were 2 of the most senior men in the room, and there might have been another 4. And then it was a room of like 100 women, all on International Women's Day, sat there talking about women's issues, being women, for women, by women. And I mean, I think they were very grateful to have the 2 guys on stage, because it broke it up a bit and they were able to say, okay, well, as a man, how are you thinking about salary? How are you thinking about, you know, roles and rewards and like help and maternity and all of that? Luckily, we had great guys so they could answer those questions. But Martin was so like, you know, where are the men? He said, where are the men in this room? Yes, you've got us sat here on stage, but we need more allyship from across, you know, the industry, to make sure that you're not just out of pocket, you know, doing a great job, but we need help.
We always joke at Nowy that we're going to curate a panel that's something about, I don't know, the fastest motorbikes in e-sporting, bring all the audience, you know, sort of trap the men. And then we say, right, plot twist, it's nothing to do with motorbikes. There's no speed, no wheels, no sporting events. We're going to talk about women and how you can improve and what you can do to better support women. But all jokes aside, you make some really good points, because I did a talk at EMEC by MPI last week, and it was about women in events, and we had some men in the room, which was really great. They came, I think, of their own accord. I didn't trap anyone. I would say 35% were men, so it was really, really great. I was really pleased, because in the past we have seen it where there's just 1 or 2 men, and again, that almost uncovers a whole other thing we could talk about how to make sure that men feel comfortable and that there is a space for them, because we need to make sure that we're not alienating anyone. But at EMEC, we had this great setup. So I decided to just pull all the chairs together and just turn it into a conversation. So I thought people learn a lot more from having a conversation than me just talking at them for 45 minutes. So we pulled all the chairs together and I asked questions to the people that joined the talk. And the first three people to talk were all men. And it was just really interesting because there were four in the room and three of them were the first three to talk and took up quite a lot of airtime, which I'm really pleased that they engaged. But then I just did a little, can you raise your hand if you noticed the first people to speak were all men? And so it's just really interesting. I think most people had noticed, but it just illustrated beautifully some of the points that we were making around confidence and speaking up and allyship. Again, another topic that came up, and half the room hadn't heard of the term, perhaps because it was quite an international crowd and perhaps because they just weren't familiar with the English terminology. But yeah, again, just really interesting to see people's reactions.
I hear that. And you know, one of the things that Martin said when we were talking is that he doesn't want it to be combative. We're not like, where are the men so that we can come and attack you? Or where are the men so that we can, you know, that isn't it. Like, we really should be coming together. I love that you turned your chairs in because that's such a good representation of like, we're here, we're working together, let's talk together. It is funny that, you know, your first three people to speak were men, because I like it because, like you said, it's engaged. But it's funny. It's like, did the dynamic shift in the room because you had a different mixture? Who knows? And we can never say. But as long as what came out of it at the end was for the progress of what you were talking about, then I love it. I'm here all day for that. Of like, you know, maybe we should have considered that on this podcast. We have, you know, bring on one of our male counterparts and just have a nice, well-rounded conversation, you know. So let's move this into like setting some standards. So, you know, if we're thinking about some of the challenges that we've literally just spoken about, you know, including salaries and job titles and confidence and imposter syndrome and all that stuff we just spoke about, what kind of standards are being set, do you think, in this industry? And is NAWI helping to set some of those standards in any way?
Well, I would hope so. I have definitely made it my life's mission to make sure that I finish my career in this industry, that it is a better place than when I started out, because although I haven't been in events for all that long, I've already started to notice some changes. And I think, especially in the live event space, which I have a lot more experience in, it's only really recently that I've moved into more sporting events and to more corporate, experiential and different sectors of the industry. But especially when you look at events that are temporary builds and it's not taking place inside of a venue, it is very much like working on a construction site. It's still very laddish. It's still very male dominated because of the nature of the infrastructure, the suppliers. It's a lot of power, water, scaffolders. There's a lot. It's very, very masculine still. And I think that there's a long way to go because perhaps because of the nature of the events taking place outside of a traditional venue, they perhaps think that they are outside of traditional norms and laws and that certain standards don't apply. But I think it is changing. We're seeing a lot more women in those roles. I think it's becoming more accessible. There's definitely a bit better representation, and there are just so many more great initiatives that there were before, like some great events for newcomers to go and understand what it really is like to work in the events industry. There are more mentorship programs, networking events, awards for newcomers to the industry. So I think we're definitely moving in the right direction. But with NAWI, we do have a very big vision that we do want to become the industry standard, well, standards for women in the industry. So one of our really big goals is to come up with an accreditation system, I think along the lines of B Corp, but for women in events. And so we will identify key criteria and key standards that we really want to see adhered to across the board. So whether it's maternity, whether it's menopause, pay gap, representation, senior leadership. So we want to make sure that we, and exactly as you said earlier, it's not about shunning those who aren't doing well. It's about encouraging people to start their journey, kind of similar to sustainability. You know, it's lots of companies don't like to talk about their sustainability because they think they're not doing enough. But there's a lot to be learned from acknowledging no one's perfect and we're all learning, and we're all, as long as companies are willing to get started on that journey, then we can help them to get there. And we want to be able to provide best practices for actually what does it look like when someone goes on maternity leave? What does it look like when they return to the workforce? What does it look like when a woman goes through menopause? How can you support women that are at that stage of their life? So we've seen some progress and it's great. I think with Nawi, it really is so rewarding because I do put a lot in and we collectively as a group put a lot of time and energy and effort into making it as great as we can for our members. But we do get so much out of it where we see and hear of so many great stories of people that have, that it has helped in their career. And I think we've still got a lot of work to do.
I love that. I love that so much. And, you know, if there are ways that people can support, like you said, sponsorship, you know, we do want to know, where can people go to find you? How do people find you? And now we, what can we do?
So you can head to our website, which is www.nawi.org. You can follow us. We're on all the social media. We're on LinkedIn is probably our main one. But if you identify as female and want to become part of the community, then check out the Facebook group. You can also share jobs in there. You can share jobs on LinkedIn and we'll reshare them. And you can find the contact form on our website if you want to reach out and drop us a line. We will be in touch. And so, yeah, hopefully we can set up a conversation with the right person within our team to have a conversation about ways to partner, to get involved, or if sponsorship is something that people are interested in, then we would be happy to share more.
Love it. And we'll also put some of your resources and web links in our socials when we share this podcast. I mean, you've given us such gold in terms of career, thinking about, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, you go to university one time and know exactly what you want to be in life. Not everyone does. I mean, I studied commercial music production. I'm definitely not doing that now. So, you know, you've given us some great nuggets in there. And I just love the sound of the community. And I would say for those of you in the UK, watch this space, because I'm going to talk to Kat at some point about what we can do together with C-Vent and Nawi and hopefully make something work. So I appreciate your time today, Kat. It's been great.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a really great conversation.
No problem. And thanks for listening. I'm just going to say one more thing. I hope you're tuned into this series because Kat is not the only great woman we've been interviewing. So if you haven't checked out the last one, do. And if not, check out the next one.
Thanks for hanging out with us on Great Events, a podcast by C-Vent.
If you've been enjoying our podcast, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.
And you can also help fellow event professionals and marketers just like you discover great events by leaving us a rating on Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform.
Stay connected with us on all your socials for behind-the-scenes content, updates, and some extra doses of inspiration.
Got a burning question or an epic story to share? We want to hear from you. Find us on LinkedIn and send us a DM or drop us a note at greatevents@cvent.com.
And a big thanks to our amazing listeners, our guest speakers, and the incredible team behind the scenes. Remember, every great event includes great people.
And that's a wrap. Keep creating, keep innovating, and keep joining us as we redefine how to make events great.